Hello and welcome to the KE Report. I'm your host, Shad Markowitz, and I'm speaking today with Fred Bell, CEO of Elemental Altus Royalties. Elemental Altus Royalties is traded on the TSXV under the ticker ELE and on the OTCQX under the ticker ELEMF. And Fred, it's great to get you on the show, as always, to get an update on Elemental Altus. A couple news blurbs that we want to get to. Most importantly, let's lead off with the 2023 full year results. I won't steal your thunder here, but it was a record year on many occasions. I think in our last talk, we had some of the operation results in, but we didn't have all the financials in, and we knew it was going to be a record. But break down the records here for 2023.
Yeah, so Shad, thank you. It's like seventh consecutive year. So every year since we started the company, we've had more revenue than the year before. And I think whenever you look at our share price graph, maybe we should have one from the first year we started, which had $500,000 for 4 or 5 years. And when we're now, last year, we were up to $17.9 million in full adjusted revenue. And for this year, we guided $2,000 gold, you know, 20 million plus. And obviously at current gold prices, it's even higher. So I think the crucial thing is not just seventh year of record revenue going from under $500,000 to just under 18 million last year, but the fact that we got growth going into this year and every single year we've been able to grow it again. So 7.9 million headline number, record adjusted revenue for last year. That's just over 9,000 gold equivalent ounces. In terms of acquisitions, we made $20 million US dollars roughly of new royalty acquisitions, building it into the portfolio. We had a record in Q4 as well, as the portfolio is growing quarter on quarter in terms of revenue. And we started to have, you know, not only EBITDA records, but also quarterly profits for the first time. And that is as we're building the company, looking to see lower G&A and higher revenue. And that revenue is now, it's got the leverage to gold and copper price. And so we're starting to see if the current spot gold and copper prices hold, you know, it's probably order of magnitude, another $3 million US dollars to us a year. And there's no cost associated with it. So it really gives us that scope for margin expansion, which then allows us to look at new investments without diluting shareholders. So I think really a lot of work over the years to get to a position where we can deploy significant amounts of capital without dilution into new deals.
Well, let's talk about that, because a lot of royalty companies have different approaches. Some are prospect generator models only, and they work on doing the early stage exploration to then option those projects off, which you've had done some of that on the Altus side of the business. But there's other companies that just buy big baskets of royalties and they have a big strategic partner that feeds them those baskets. Other companies do one-off transactions, but you were pretty clear from the get-go that you wanted to focus on producing assets that would generate cash flow first and foremost. You know, you do have some development stage assets as well, but maybe speak to how that's given you a catbird seat now to have focused on cash flowing assets first, and now you have that optionality to look at some of the longer dated but better value opportunities that are presenting themselves in the marketplace.
Yeah, you've hit the nail on the head there, Shad. I think the reality is the hardest thing to do in the royalty space, the holy grail, is to get good quality producing royalties that give you cash flow immediately. And we really focused in a very disciplined manner on that from starting the company, to make sure we were cash flow positive, to make sure we could choose when we raise money. And it puts us in a position, and we all know mining is a cyclical industry. And if you're a long-term mining investor, you will look at recent markets, and particularly, I think, around the turn of the year and Q1 this year, and you'll look back and I think see some very depressed share prices and assets. And it's easy to see it from the outside and see that there's value there, but it's much harder to actually not only have the courage of your convictions, but then also having the capital available to deploy. And that is really where I think we come into our strength, which is we're having record revenues and we're lowering our G&A at the same time that there is real value on display in the market. So for us, very different position to a lot of other junior companies. We're actually out there deploying capital. We did 10 transactions in total last year, you know, almost one a month. And this year, we're going to be equally busy in putting our free cash flow to work, getting more optionality, more exposure to assets. And our portfolio is probably 70% gold, 30% copper. So I think that's a really neat balance at the moment. And very much looking forward to being able to grow the company without any dilution to shareholders.
Yeah, that's a nice thing to see, because a lot of the individual mining companies, unlike a royalty company, do have the dilutive effect. If they want to grow, you can grow through the cash flowing generative side of the business. And you've mentioned you did 10 transactions last year, almost one a month. Maybe just highlight some of what you did last year. I know we've talked about this before, but just for those tuning in, you took some assets that you would have had to invest a lot of money in and maybe not have as quick of a turnaround in, but instead found really solid operational partners to option those projects off to, lowered your G&A expense, but also allowed those partners to expedite the development of those projects.
Yes, absolutely. And I think one of those assets, the larger one, is going into production this quarter. And that is the Diba asset. And it's a very overlooked asset in our portfolio. Really don't think it gets the value it should. It is adjacent, a long strike, to Allied Gold's Sadiola mine. And Sadiola, for those who don't know, it is a tier one asset. Without being a tier one mine, it probably needs $500 million of capex to expand it, you know, to the size where it meets that definition. But it is a 10 million ounce plus resource. So geologically fabulous, huge resource. Our project for years, over a decade, in fact, has been a long strike into the south, and it's always been in the hands of a junior. And it's now, as of the end of last year, in the hands of the operator of the mine. They built a $12 million haul road to the first deposit since they acquired it. They declared a maiden reserve on that about a month ago. They also grew the resource about 20%, and they're getting it into production this quarter. And I mean, that is pretty impressive timing for a transaction that only closed, you know, around Q4 last year, to have all of that. So I think we're going to continue to see a lot of positive news there. And when you do get these huge ore bodies, you know, 10 million ounce deposits, they often say the best place to find a new deposit is next to an existing one. And here, there is a lot of exploration potential on it. And that asset, where we were putting money into it as recently as last year, is now actually an asset for us that's going to have a 3% royalty that drops down to a 2% royalty forever. And it's uncapped. As if they find 10 million ounces on that project, we will have a 2% royalty on everything they mine and everything that's there. And then we also have about $5 million in one-off payments related to first production, commissioning, and the first 200,000 ounces of production. So that really is a part of the growth story for this year, that asset coming online. And Allied have said, the operator, that it should be starting production this quarter.
Well, and Fred, this brings up the larger point for royalty companies. The value proposition is that on an uncapped royalty like that, like you say, they could just keep finding more and more ounces to extend mine life or extend the profit trail for Elemental Altus shareholders. Another royalty that you added to last year was the large copper project in South American Chile, the Caserones copper mine. You upped your stake in that net smelter royalty, and that's another example of a generational asset. So maybe just speak to how some of these assets can have stronger partners come into them and extend the mine life far beyond what was seen at first blush.
Yeah, that's a great example. And Lundin Mining and Lundin family are such well-regarded operators and such a long track record. And to have them come in as a majority owners of the Caserones mine in Chile, which is now, it's our largest royalty in terms of value ascribed by analysts and by the market. And I think since they built that mine, and it was built in around 2013, there had been no regional exploration. And part of the reason for that is they had a very long mine life already. And it wasn't easy for them to increase the throughput and turn it into a bigger mine. And so really little to no exploration was done over that period. And since that asset has been acquired by the Lundins, they have gone straight into exploration, and they're doing a significant exploration program in our royalty area right now. And we don't have to pay anything for it. Our royalty will cover it. And, you know, the reason they are doing that is because partly through synergies and other assets they have in the region, they do have a greater ability to increase the throughput there. And any throughput increase that they do potentially do in the future is not just more revenue for us, but it's bringing it forward. It's bringing the value up, and the exploration they're doing is replacing ounces. So I think a real win on both of those fronts for us there. And it's one of the benefits of the royalty model, for those who aren't familiar with it, is you have optionality at no cost to a lot of projects. And we've talked mostly in the last 5 minutes on two of our royalties, two of our roughly 10 producing royalties. And we have about 75 plus other royalties in the portfolio. And some of those are on development copper assets in Arizona, where Rio Tinto, one of the world's biggest miners, is a shareholder. Some of those are on gold assets in West Australia. One of those is in a portfolio that is the fourth largest exploration package in Egypt after some of the majors. So we have a really, really diverse portfolio of royalties where we will never have to spend another dollar, but where the operators and the owners are going to keep investing money every year to keep exploring, and in the case of the mines, to keep replenishing their resources. So it's a great place to be in. I think most important is being cash flow positive in this market and having an ability to continually grow that portfolio and grow the exposure for our investors, but actually to do it, if we wish, without any dilution. So it puts us in that position where we can actively make the decision whether we wish to issue new shares. And so we're never forced into it, which is a really important defensive attribute for any company in the mining space, which, as we know, is very cyclical.
Well, Fred, let's dig into that idea a little bit more, and let's look at future acquisitions. Like you say, you've got 10 producing assets, you've got 75 overall royalty assets, a lot of those in the development and exploration phase, moving those projects down the pipeline. But when you look towards future transactions, since you have cash built up, since you're generating cash, but you also have, you know, the equity component where you could use that if they wanted to take part in the company's growth in the future, how are you looking at structuring future deals? What kind of deals are you looking at? And maybe just explain to the audience where you are in the overall royalty sector compared to the majors or the really tiny juniors, the kind of deal flow that you're able to look at.
We are in a really interesting position right now because with the markets coming off, I think a lot of the junior royalty companies have a lot of development exposure and exploration exposure, but they don't have much revenue and they don't have much free cash flow. And in these markets, I think a lot of companies are reticent to issue new equity and raise capital because of the dilutionary effect. And so I think in the smaller royalty space, there are companies who are being very cautious about deploying new capital or raising new capital. And I think the same is true on the other spectrum for the majors, which is they are seeing big deals and they do have the money. And so they're focusing their attention on those, the sort of call it $100 million to $500 million deals. And so that leaves a big gap in that middle space, which is call it $5 million to $20 million, where it's too small right now for some of the larger royalty companies. And it's too big right now for some of the smaller royalty companies or royalty companies without revenue. And I think that is where we have a really nice position. And for us, because we have done the really hard yards and we have built the revenue base of the company, we actually have the flexibility to look at non-producing assets as well. And those are some assets where I think there is really deep value available. And we can do that in a way that some of our peers, I think, will find it hard to do. So for us, last year was the first year we started buying actively, looking out and buying non-producing royalties as well as producing royalties. And this year is going to be a continuance of that, but benefiting from even greater margins, even greater revenue, even more cash flow. So a much enhanced ability to do those types of transactions in a non-dilutionary way.
Well, let's also get an update on the 2024 guidance as far as what you're looking for the balance of this year as things stand today. Obviously, if you make some acquisitions, that could change the dynamics. But how are you looking at guidance going into this year as far as gold equivalent ounces and as far as revenues? And does it make any difference that gold keeps hitting all-time highs?
Yes. The nice thing about being a company with operating royalties and direct exposure to commodity prices is that if the gold price goes up to $3,000 tomorrow and it stays there for 3 months, we will capture the benefit of that over those 3 months. So, I mean, look, a few weeks ago, maybe even more recently, we put out our guidance for this year and it was 10,000 to 11,700 gold equivalent ounces. So roughly speaking, at $2,000 gold and $390 copper, we were looking at, I think, $20 to $23 million in terms of revenue. And if you look at where gold and copper price is today, that's probably more like $22 to $26 million of revenue. And that additional revenue comes at no cost to us. So it's all straight to the bottom line. So if you take spot prices, you might say, be conservative, call it $22 to $25 million this year at current prices. And we have an additional $4 million in one-off payments. So broadly, at a high level revenue, that would take it to $26 to $29 million this year. And looking ahead to next year, royalty revenue at the moment would be, you could assume, the same as this year, but we have about $15 million US in one-off payments that we're expecting to receive next year. So we have real cash flow generation, and that enables us to go out and invest in opportunities where there is a scarcity of money in the market right now. And I was just talking to someone in the space earlier, and they were talking about precisely that fact, that there is a lack of capital in the mining sector at the moment, and particularly pronounced in the junior space. I think nowadays, some of the majors, some of the mid-tiers, you know, they get a lot of flow through ETFs, indexes, etc. I think if you're below that level, it's really tough. There aren't as many, perhaps, mining institutional investors as there were in the past. And so I think when capital dries up and when the valuations come down, I think the junior space, you can get more leverage on the upside, but you can also be more exposed on the downside. So I think we can fill a really important role in actually being able to provide capital for junior companies, for participants in the mining space who would like to raise non-dilutive capital or sell non-core assets if it's royalties. And that should be a win-win. Certainly, it's easy to say, hard to do. And you've got to have the courage of your convictions, and you've got to go out there and really look at opportunities and be aggressive when perhaps others are cautious.
Well, Fred, we'll wrap it up there, but we'll keep following along to see what kind of deals Elemental Altus has in the works for later this year. If you are able to provide that much-needed capital to the junior mining sector, help them from having dilutive financing, but also create good royalty transactions in the process for Elemental Altus shareholders, it's a win-win for everybody. It's a win-win for the sector. It sounds like it's an exciting year of growth for the company once again after a record year last year in 2023. Appreciate you coming on and sharing the overview of how last year went and what you're looking forward to in 2024. And if investors want to follow along with the news at Elemental Altus Royalties, definitely click on the link below this interview. It takes you over to the company's website to their news section. And Fred, keep us posted as more news hits. We'll get you back on the show. Looking forward to our next conversation.
Brilliant, Chad. Thank you very much for having me.